Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophies, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you're at in the world today. And it could be one of 203 countries that regularly visit our site. I'm your host, Ed Hubbard, along with my illustrious, ever-beautiful co-host,
Marianne,
who has diligently fought off the flu viruses this week to be here with us this very fine Monday.
That's right. A second time the flu has felled me, just like you.
You know, I find that's common.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are talking about it, but it's interesting. Some get it in a different order, but there seems to be two different flus that are riding each other.
How nice.
So, see, that's what Richard Reiser always says. They're diabolical. They're always evolving.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
They are, and we scoffed at our flu shots, so it's our fault.
Yeah, we did. We did scoff, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Because they just said it was for, like, you know, people that were more susceptible to the flu, like old people. And we're like, oh, that doesn't apply to us.
No.
No.
but unfortunately, it'll make me think twice about it.
It will, I suppose, until next year when I've forgotten all about it again. Mm-hmm.
Well,
I don't
know. Yeah, there is that, isn't there? I'm hoping that I won't do that a second time.
It's just one of those things. You just forget how bad it is until you get it again.
Mhm. Okay, so we're gonna jump in, and I'm wondering, with all your stats, do you have your Etsy pick of the week?
You know, I don't.
It's okay.
I'm afraid I don't. I'm just not. Not so much.
All right. Well, friends. Actually, if you want your shop mentioned on Etsy, you just have to write Marianne at pagantonight@gmail.com or Marianne at Witch School, and she will, you know, mention you.
Yes.
So, if you don't contact her, maybe then she doesn't, doesn't deal with it. Okay, so let's go on to our next piece, which is the Fox News. Story. Well, it seems that Fox News, well, let's be particular, and I've been on the show, Fox Friends, yeah, Family and Friends, Fox Friends in the Morning.
Is that what it was? I didn't know.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it's Fox Friends. Fox News Friends, you know, basically.
Well, they're no friends of mine.
Well, and this is the one that Saturday Night Live is always making fun of.
Ah, okay.
Saturday Night Live has always been making fun of these guys because they're kind of, they're kind of dumb at some levels. I mean, this is not one of the smart, you know, Fox, for all it's worth, has got some really smart people on there who say some really nasty, disastrous, hateful things sometimes. But they do it at least with some wit. These guys are boring. And so,
they're insipid.
Friends,
I found them insipid.
Yeah? That's it. They're like art of, they're the pretend Good Morning America and Today Show. I mean, it's hard to take them seriously. And I actually knew about this, but then they basically decided, the University of Missouri decided, and it's not the first university to do it, but it is one of the best universities that came publicly, to include Wiccan and pagan holidays within their calendar as days that we really shouldn't have exams because, well, there's some pagans and Wiccans who celebrate, and they have a right to take that time off, just like Christians and Muslims and other groups have their religious holidays off. So, and the important thing is if a teacher then schedules an exam on that day, they can say, can I take it another day?
Right.
And they go, And the teacher will have to go, well, okay, no harm, no foul, yes, you can.
Huh? Right. And that seems perfectly reasonable, because most of the other holidays that are celebrated are actually, you don't even have to go to school that day. So that seems reasonable.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, but so basically Fox News went on to attack Wiccans. And one of the things they basically called us is either they're Dungeons and Dragons players, I resemble that mark, or twice divorced, you know, older women.
Yeah, that was really rude. I found them very rude. And then they couldn't even decide how many holidays there were. First it was, I don't know, first it was 20% of something, and then it was 20 by the end of the little piece, it was 20 holidays that witches and pagans celebrated every year.
That's
which I'm
right.
I think they kind of got a little confused there.
That's really only 8.
It was just, I found it very offensive. Just because they were being so ignorant about it.
Right.
You know, they were acting like high schoolers or even
Nature of that show. They do act high schoolish.
Mm. Or even junior high.
Yeah, they act childish. I mean, it's not the most serious show in the world.
No.
And they've said other stupid and terrible things. This is a show that regularly had Sarah Palin on it.
Ah, well, there you go. I can see Russia from my back door, Sarah Palin, huh? Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of part of that whole thing.
It was very offensive. I can see why people found it offensive. Did you ever find out any more about the fact that they were trying to actually cover it up after the fact?
Well, and that's it. They did. They tried to, you know, cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
Or
kind of make it go away and hope people
right.
find
Let
it.
Let me get a And here's the line that he really got to people. It says, I guess that's one way to go. I mean, certainly the one. If you're going to pick one, let's go with one with the most holidays. Except any religion, whose sacred day is Halloween. I just can't take it seriously. I mean, call me a bigot, and we will. And I'm not, you know. Well, this argument. Not offering an editorial rant against Wiccanism. He said, every Wiccan was either a compulsive Dungeons and Dragons player, I used to be, or as a middle-aged, twice-divorced, older woman living in a rural area who wants to work as a midwife.
Yeah.
I actually dated one of those, but...
That's beside the point. It's the way they said it. It was just the way they said it.
And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And people are starting to make a noise. We'll see what they do. And they try to cover it up. Of course they do. They know they crossed the line.
It was pretty bad. But evidently now people are just now finding out about it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it. It took a little time. But I think one of the things I think people... I don't really care that Fox did this. I mean, it's bad that they do it. But I guess at this point in the game, they're showing their colors. There's a doctor out called Dr. Carlson. And he's a black physician who's also a minister. And he's actually retiring from the medical trade this year.
What's his name?
Carlson.
He's on Fox News?
Well, no, he's been on Fox News lately, but he was at a prayer meeting. He was at a prayer breakfast with the President of the United States. And, man, he took the president and a lot of people to task.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about now.
And he basically started to use the Bible to talk about a couple of things. And one of the things I think I have to agree with him is this whole concept of political correctness. He says, we have a right to the First Amendment and we have a right to express ourselves. And his argument is that political correctness is a gag that we're putting on ourselves. That we're imposing this sort of gag on it so that people... are not being allowed to express certain thoughts and feelings. And sometimes I feel that way too. I mean, sometimes I think that people get just too bristly. And so I warn against, you know, taking Tucker and his little, you know, Tucker Carlson and his little crew of Fox and Super Friends.
Bobby's Doctors.
Bobby's Doctors. And taking them any more seriously than you would take, say, cheerleaders in high school who are teasing.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's ruthless. I know it's bad. But at the end of the day, I do think we have to be. And Dr. Carlson brought up a point, is that it's hard in a world of political correctness to be able to express outrage over things that are not politically correct. So even though these people were politically incorrect and probably false, and certainly they should hear about it, we shouldn't also attack every time somebody tries to offend us. I mean, this took a while to get through.
Well, I guess it's the difference between somebody just saying it as a person and somebody representing a company or a station and saying
okay.
it. You know, as someone that's supposedly a spokesperson or someone that might be held up as someone that knows what they're talking about. How's
right.
that? That some sort of a, they've actually done
right.
some research about it. You would think if they're on an actual TV show that's about sort of news, that they might actually know what they're talking about, but obviously this is not the case.
Right.
I believe CNN has a station like that as well, don't they?
Headline News, HLN.
Mm. Now, I don't know if it's that way all the time, but I know the day that we watched it, they had a kind of a similar group of people that were...
Oh, just awful. Well, Glenn Beck got his real big start on HLN.
Mm, okay.
Before he jumped over to Fox.
Mm-hmm. Where he found his home. People like him.
So, yeah, people like him. And so basically, and I guess one of the things I think in Wild Times, Heather Green makes a point that what she doesn't like about this moves Wiccans from evil, that's no longer to Wiccans or clowns. And while maybe sophomoric, it's just like, you know, basically, they're trying to make us look like clowns. They're trying to make pagans look like clowns. To try and make them not serious. You know,
well,
not so
and they had the typical, oh, well, you can't even say Merry Christmas anymore, you know, because everybody's persecuting us. And it's like, yeah,
right.
whatever.
And so that's out in the news today, and I think that's kind of interesting. We'll keep an eye on that and other stories. I certainly think that it is interesting. But the thing about Dr. Carlson was saying is that I think people are trying to get past. I think we're trying to get to a ruder society. I think there's some levels of us that are really are tired of by the polite society we've been trying to keep, because they really want to say terrible, hateful things. And I wish they were allowed.
Absolutely. And it's all over the internet. People say things on the internet that they would never say to somebody in person ever.
Oh no.
Yeah.
And people don't like honesty on the internet. They don't like honesty about how unreal the internet is.
I guess I'm. The problem is, it's like there's. It just seems to swing from one extreme to the other instead of being a little bit more level as far as, you know. You can be courteous and you can be. You don't have to blast people and you don't have to be completely politically correct because obviously they aren't. But at the same time, I mean, my gosh, I've seen some really hateful stuff spread across Facebook.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I see some very personal hateful stuff going across
the
face.
Like, really? This is way more information than I want to know about you. Thank
and
you.
And this is a kind
my
of
brand. Click. Yeah.
And this is a kind of personal record.
Yeah, it never goes away.
It's stored somewhere. So somewhere, someday, somebody who wants to find out about your life can find out about this, too. They're saying this is eliminating political potential presidents and senators of the future very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, you really should be careful what you do say on the internet because it will be Googled for years to come.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I talk about
I think
that.
There's
I mean,
still
I,
some dirt out there about you.
Well, there's a lot of dirt out there on me. Like I said, my reputation has a better time than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cooler. I'm kind of a nerd myself, but there you go. But we're gonna let me go ahead and take a quick. I think let me go ahead and let me get this lined up first before I say anything. Alrighty. Let me go ahead and take this a little quickie break, and then we'll get back. We're going to talk about our main subject, which is how to make money from your garden. And so we're going to take a quick commercial break and be right back.
My Mystic Gems offers a unique and unusual variety of vintage and modern jewelry items. My handcrafted creations include steampunk jewelry, crystal and elemental designs, cosplay accessories, wish wands, and beautiful bullets, my signature line of piece jewelry. My designs are perfect for all gift occasions, including holidays, birthdays, and anniversaries, as well as bridesmaids and groomsmen's gifts for weddings. I do offer custom pieces and will work with you to create something special just for you. Visit my website at mymysticgems.com to find links to both my Etsy and Artfire stores online. You can contact me at mymysticgems@gmail.com.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis from witchschool.com, your anyone, anytime, anyplace online magical education. With a wide range of classes in magic, witchcraft, and psychic arts, as well as exciting social forums through Ning and Yahoo, video through Magic TV, and online radio with Pagans Tonight. Buy a membership today, witchschool.com.
And we're back. That was a nice quick little break.
Everything all right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, I was about to begin coughing.
Oh, okay. Now, that's an interesting thing. You said today when you were doing filming, you were able to prevent it.
Yes.
But
yes,
you can't do it auto-ally.
No, I don't know what it is. It was like... I was about to have a coughing fit, so I want to take a break there.
I got you.
And I was trying to be polite about it. I was going, oh, man, I'm coughing fit. Hold on. What is this? And, of course, I think that people should go to My Mystic Gems and really take a look at your stuff.
Thank you.
And Witchfield's, you know, time's running out on Witchfield lifetime memberships.
Yes.
At least I think so.
I think it is. I think so. Michael and Lindsay have been working really hard on trying to get things set up on the site, and they've been having a lot of feedback on how the website looks, but I think they're going to get there eventually. It's a process. When we first did it, we went through the same thing. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And as much as people think they love that. But, yeah, no, so today I did filming for the Urban Farm Report to get the first couple of shows up. It's going to start March 6th at 8 p.m. on eGen TV. And the new episode will go up every Wednesday at 8 p.m.
Now, this is an Internet show?
This is an Internet show.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
It is an Internet-based show called eGen.TV. Now, what makes it interesting is it's got agreements, you know, if cable stations could pick it up. It's
okay,
built in such a way that, you know, they're built in a way that kind of has an open subsidiary.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can come and grab it if they want it for something in particular.
Okay. That'd be good.
Yeah. And I use YouTube videos. I use other types of pieces. I use stories that I've gathered in my own personal experience. And I talk a little bit about different things that are happening in and around Chicago. So, yeah, after doing 3 episodes, I did 2 more episodes today. So I'm still getting my feel for what it's going to eventually be like. But it's the Urban Farm Report.
I'm sorry. I have just a little flashback of Les Nessman and the Farm Report that he used to do. Therapy. I'm dating myself. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, they still show KRP on the Hub here in Chicago.
Did they?
They have this. They have a secondary channel on Channel 9. I guess when the station was digital, Channel 9 got actually 2 or 3 extra stations that they can use on cable. It's like 9.1, 9.2, 9.3. Like, really? And one of them's called Antenna TV. TV as it used to be. and WKRP. They have all those old-timey shows. Because they weren't old-timey when I watched them.
I was going to say, they're not quite that old-timey, are they? They're like the 70s. I mean, I guess maybe that is old-timey, but not quite that bad.
It was us like watching Lucy. Well, I didn't see that much. Some of the Lucy I saw live. I mean, I guess I was young enough. For the baseball, I saw Lucy in reruns and Three Stooges in reruns. So.
You what?
Yeah, like I Love Lucy, some of the major shows I saw in reruns. For me, I Love Lucy is an afternoon, one of the later afternoon shows.
Okay. I don't remember when it was on originally. I was pretty young when it first started.
Yeah, and well, it ran for a while while I was, when I was a kid, there was always a Lucy show on.
Yeah, it did. There were several versions of it.
And that was usually a daytime show, I remember. They did a lot of daytime.
She had a little primetime show for a while.
Yeah.
In her later incarnations when she was with, I think she was still with Ethel.
Right. Yeah,
and Mr. Mooney, the bank manager.
Right. Some wild, yeah. So that's kind of out there. So there's continuing. So all television continues to exist, too. So there's this, you know, there's this sort of this, I guess, one of the things I think I feel from this, there's this permanence coming in society, isn't there? Television shows, movies, all this stuff is just piling up, the sort of entertainment and information and news. This is all just
once they found out how to preserve them, yeah. It's, I mean, a lot of stuff I think was lost. Some of the early television and movies were lost because the film disintegrated. But once they figured out how to preserve it, it's I mean, it's eternal. They can keep it forever digitally. So that's kind of cool in a way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, as generations go on, they'll be able to watch shows that are like, oh, this movie happened 100 years ago. We're doing that now.
Watching Metropolis, the movie Metropolis, and you know, that was when, what, 1920 or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. The introduction of the robot.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gotten
completely and totally off topic again. I apologize, but I think it's some sort of weird hangover from the flu that has made me wander.
But okay, so we're talking a little bit about gardening. And one of the things I think that's really kind of interesting about what's happening out there is that we're returning, there's a lot of discussion of the Victory Garden of World War II. It seems that the Victory Gardens were really very, very important, and they had a lot of diversity to them. And people really did, for years, grow gardens for food.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that was something even when I was a kid. We didn't have a huge garden space, but there was a lot of stuff we grew ourselves.
Right. Well, I've always had gardens. When I was a kid, I had gardens. Mm-hmm. I like gardens.
I mean, I don't remember buying store-bought jelly because Mom made her own. I mean, it wasn't until I was probably like a teenager before I maybe ate store-bought jelly, to be honest. And others, you know, there were several things like that. So I think it was really common in the right after the war and up into the 60s when people did their own gardens.
Well, yeah. I mean, and then it kind of, you know, and then it always got me because it kind of disappeared for a while then.
I think people got so, even people in small towns got, everything was so readily available and, I mean, there was just so much. Even, you know, in this town, we had like 4 grocery stores, big ones. I mean, you know, relatively big ones. And several smaller local, like little neighborhood markets. So, I mean, why would you, you know, you could buy anything you wanted practically. Well, for us, it was, you know, there was a lot of stuff. Probably
oh, sure.
Like cities,
I mean, the variety was just tremendous.
Yeah.
Even today, some of the stores are even, and that growth of choice is continuing to grow. It's just become tremendous.
Mm-hmm. more so in the bigger cities. I've noticed the smaller towns have started to suffer again from supply chains, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned it yourself in the grocery store sometime here.
Oh, I find the grocery stores in Houston in the small town area to be very frustrating at times.
Yeah, it is for me as well. Yeah, because I live so far, I mean, a long away that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you would think that some ingredients would be there, and they're not.
Yeah.
There's no need for it because they wouldn't sell enough. I do think Food Network has a lot of influence over what we've been eating. I really think the Food Network has become a really crucial part of our culture and how we eat now.
Oh, I think so too. Yeah.
I mean, I think they're introducing so many foods. And I think shows like Chopped do it. Yeah, because they're always throwing in these weird ingredients and people go, what type of ingredient is that?
Yeah, there's stuff I've never heard of, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Even stuff you've never heard of, and you're a lot more educated food wise than I am.
Mm-hmm. I would consider there was this test they had on 100 different foods, and I got a 94 on it, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, yeah, it tastes a lot of things. But yeah, they get me in even ingredients there that we don't know, you know, that I haven't heard of, and things like that. So they're constantly increasing the palate. And then they have, like, Worst Cook in America.
yeah.
Boy, they, I don't know how true they are, but they was a really bad cook. But then they show them these techniques, and as they're learning the techniques, so are you. So, and I think that they introduced microgreens. So I think there's a lot of foods that get introduced now to the American palate that is becoming part of our collection. And I think that is one of the great opportunities for people to do so. Never before today is the Victory Garden, the idea of the Victory Garden, as important. Certainly because our food is getting to be so expensive, and it is getting to be pricey, and it is getting to be more difficult to get it. I mean, you're right. You pointed out that you would think that fresh fruits and vegetables would be really, really super easy to get in that place that is a farm town. But the really truth is, it's very, very hard to get really good quality fruits and vegetables year-round here in central Illinois, in the small town.
It is. I mean, there's certain things that, like corn, you can usually get sweet corn because it's just so predominant around here. There are people that actually grow it for sale around here, so it's available.
Right.
And we do have some small truck farms and things that sell stuff, but that's in the summer only. It's not available all year long.
Right, and it's just not available. And so, and even when it's available, a lot of it's just, you know, the usual stuff. I mean, a very small amount of, you know, very basic materials.
Right.
You don't see really gourmet foods.
Well, and that may be why people are starting to grow gardens again, is because they can grow more exotic things. And I mean, there's seeds available, and they can grow stuff that they see on TV, and that's probably, like, kind of a cool factor for them.
Well, I'm looking at these tiny, something called tiny bok choys, and they're miniature bok choy for Chinese, which is a Chinese cabbage. Kind of a cross between a cabbage and a celery. And I love bok choy for Chinese dishes that I make. So I'm looking at these miniature ones because I think you can cook a whole one. Instead of chopping them up, you can cook a whole one and use them for something.
Mm, okay.
I mean, it's kind of that sort of thing. But, you know, nobody's growing them yet, but I've seen it in the catalog. So that's kind of one of those. But for me, when I have grown a garden, and you really do have to have time to grow a garden. You just can't just plant it and then abandon it. It just won't work. You'll get a mess and barely anything worth calling a garden out of it. So you really do have to take care of it. How much you have to take care of it depends on the type of gardener you are and the intensity that you want to garden and the results you want.
Well, and the climate you live in as well.
Right. And so, yeah, it's something that you do. But for us, the two of the things we grew spaghetti squash. Because I like spaghetti squash, but at $1.59 a pound, and these things usually weigh 3 or 4 pounds, a spaghetti squash can easily cost me $5 or $6 per fruit. So for me, I was well worth it for me to grow that.
And they grew very well here, if I recall.
They did, and I had a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up with about 20 of them, which means I spent $2 on the seeds, the package of seeds of them, and my labor and everything else. But I basically saved at least $100 by growing my own spaghetti squash. Probably the most expensive rare item I grew, because we only got 4 ears of it, is the ruby red super sweet corn. It was a very different type of sweet corn that was bright red. And we were able to get the first 4 years, we just picked it, we put it on there. And Mary Ann's a connoisseur of sweet corn. And she grew up with real sweet corn, really from the farm. Yeah, we have the sweet corn festival every year, and she won't touch the sweet corn from that because it's just not good enough.
It's old.
Because
it's old.
Right.
It's the end of season stuff, yeah.
And even this was the richest sweet corn we've ever had.
Yeah.
So once you have something that delicious, you need to find a way to prevent squirrels. So I went out there the next day because I had another 9 or 10 ears across another 5 or 6 plants. I mean, I didn't grow a lot of this. And I said, wow, something got in my ear. They bent one of my stalks. And I thought it was a deer or something. And I went to Chicago for a weekend and expected to have this beautiful ruby sweet corn vet. And Marianne watched as well. You can describe your scene there, Marianne.
Well, I was, looking out in the backyard and I saw something moving in the corn. And when I went out to check, it was squirrels. And squirrels were attacking the corn. And there was like 3 or 4 of them. And they'd jump up on the ears and the weight would pull them down, and I tried to chase them, but they ran off with the corn. They were vicious.
They challenged you, right?
They were willing to fight me for it. Yes. Yes, they were. It was horrible.
And well, yes,
it was a travesty.
And these are friendly squirrels to you normally, right? Because you feed them.
Well, yeah, but it's like they turned on me, didn't they? It was just too good.
And so this year when we
grow it,
and we're going to have to probably put that into a cage. People say, well, a cage means that they just have something to cut through. So I have to figure out a way to save my sweet corn.
I don't know, because that was just evidently more than they could stand.
Mm-hmm.
Let it go.
Well, they left my cucumbers alone. Now, cucumbers I had tons and tons and tons of.
The only other thing they thought of was your watermelons. They went after those, too. And just enough to ruin them. You know.
They ruined them, and they ruined them young. They're fairly young. They ruined my watermelon, and the watermelon was fairly young.
Before they got a chance to mature, and so there really wasn't anything you could do. They just took chunks out of them and then left them alone.
Yeah, they decided they didn't like it. They just took chunks out of them. No. So, I have to find answers for that this year. So there isn't, just because you're growing things, that doesn't mean it is. But there's a lot of things that you can grow. But let me get back into one of the ways. For all our mishaps, overall, the garden still saved me money on vegetables. And they gave me a variety of vegetables that were just much more flavorful. I made a whole pot of spaghetti sauce from tomatoes. I had tons and tons of tomatoes. Gave away a bunch of tomatoes. And I was actually one of the few people who had tomatoes that year. For some reason, a lot of other people did not have tomatoes grow. So.
You had those pretty radishes.
The watermelon radishes,
Those were pretty. I don't really care for radishes. I don't know how they tasted. I think they were really hot, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. They were nice and spicy.
Yeah.
A little too spicy for me, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so this year we're expecting to grow things. But you have to find out what do you like, your palate. And then you can find out that you can find a lot of ingredients. Like if you like garlic, there's a garlic fest in St. Louis that's big on this. But you can grow different types of garlic. And surprisingly, beyond the variety, you get one, maybe you're lucky if you get 2 varieties of garlic in your grocery store. Kind of the sort of mass-produced one. But, like, we're growing what's called red Russian garlic.
I think it was German, wasn't it?
red German garlic. There's a red Russian garlic and red German. I think we're growing the German one. And we're hoping to get it next year or later this year when it comes up. But when it grows, it has these little tiny cloves of really intense garlic flavor. Very, very tiny little cloves. And that'll be worth something. And there's all sorts of garlic that you can grow. So
I actually ordered those off of eBay. That's where I found the little bulbs.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, absolutely. And it was kind of cool. And there's all sorts of things like that. So that's one place you can do it. And people are starting to save seeds. So seeds, too, are becoming valuable. So the big thing is decide what do you like. What is it that you're spending a lot of money on? And start focusing some of your growing on things that you like, that you're spending a large, would be willing to spend. And this is the nice thing. You don't even have to say that, oh, I would spend money on it. No, listen, I would like to spend money on that. You grow it, you can. And then when you get surplus, then you have a sort of opportunity depending on the area that you live in. Some areas have stricter rules and some have less strict rules, but you certainly can sell or at a farmer's market or kind of a flea market type things that are local or trade it with your neighbors or, you know, trade it with other people.
Yeah,
or,
we actually have some people in the neighborhood that grow things that we would probably trade with. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly you can do that. If you're trying to make things for, like, a large volume of things like zucchini, tomatoes, especially, like, cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers of all kinds, these are really things that people want. Now, the plant, which is an indoor vertical farm, we do a lot of microgreens, and they don't grow microgreens outside because they're just too delicate and they're just, you know, not worth growing outdoors.
What exactly would you consider a microgreen?
It is microgreens is greens that are grown to no more than 28 days. They're very small, tender.
Okay, like for give me an example.
Arugula.
Oh, okay.
Mustard, sunflower, radish. Things that have very big flavor in their leaves.
Oh, okay.
Hickory. There's like a little hickory. There's like a little hickory one now.
Chicory, you mean?
No, hickory.
Hickory?
It's a hickory. It's not real hickory. It's a hickory.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. You're not quite pronouncing it right. I can't remember how you pronounce it, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
It has a really strong, intense flavor. So microgreens are very young plants that have been grown for the particular purposes of serving young and when they're very soft and when they're very tender and they have a lot of flavor. Restaurants use them a lot, and then they're like the really super tender. So it's kind of the same thing as bigger things. Another good example of that is bean sprouts. There's also sprouts. Microgreens are a little bit smaller than sprouts. People like sprouts. And so those things are usually grown better in greenhouses or in sort of controlled environments. And then you can go for a lot of money. Arugula is $22 a pound.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that stuff they throw around like water on Chopped all the time is $22 a pound?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it can be up to $22 a pound.
Boy, you know, I'm you got to know that I just don't get it because I'm not like a big greenie.
Right. We have another called Bull's Blood Radishes. Very small plant, very tender green, and it can go for $28 to $30 a pound.
Wow.
So this is the way some of these guys, some of these vertical farms are making money, especially serving the high-end restaurant market. Probably the one thing that everybody wants and hard want, people say squirrels will take over the world in the chat room. I just saw that.
What is it? I'm sorry?
Squirrels will take over the world.
Oh. Yeah.
They could be our evolutionary poison if we screw up. I can see squirrels doing that.
There are, I think they're still trying to build feeders that they're squirrel-proof, and I'm not sure if they've got that accomplished yet or not.
Sure, just the birds can't get to it either.
What?
And I was thinking about it. Yeah, the birds can't get to it either.
Oh.
So these are the type of things, but you can grow things that you like. If you grow things that you like that have value, then you're going to do well. I like colored carrots. I really like the different colored carrots. Haven't grown them yet. This is my year for growing them, I think.
They are. They're pretty. I don't know how they taste, but they're pretty.
Mm-hmm. And soon you'll be, and by being able to grow extra food and being able to share that food, I think is a really important aspect, and you will make money. There are people who are making on 1/10 of an acre with proper square foot gardening methods and everything else, 6,000 pounds of food on 1/10 of an acre.
And that is the thing. You have to realize how much you're able to do and how much you're able to take care of, because it can become too big and it's hard to keep up. You know, you've just got too much stuff. Mm-hmm. If you don't plan ahead a little bit and decide what you're going to do with it, you know, whether you're going to actually like try and preserve some of it, or if you're going to sell it, or if you're going to trade it, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes, well, you found that out the year you did the garden down here a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was producing a lot more than you thought it would.
Right.
Yeah. Now, this year, there might be some special problems because there might be another drought. So that's always something that you have to take into consideration, too, is what's your weather going to be like? You know, are you going to
mm-hmm.
have to do a lot of heavy watering? Are you going to have to worry about it being too hot? Because that can ruin a garden if it gets too hot.
And because there's a drought, this possibility this year, I think it's a good year to do planting. Because if you are successful at it and take some of your gray water, when you know, some of your water that you're using, you know, instead of putting it out into the sewer, get it into your garden. I'm not sure exactly. We won't discuss exactly all the different ways, but certainly the water that you wash dishes into can be put around there. You can save your rainwater to buckets and barrels.
Absolutely. That is one way to do it, yeah.
Certainly start saving rainwater for the later parts of the year. But
there used to be, instead of eaves, well, you had an eaves, but it went down into a rain barrel and you kept
mm-hmm.
it. And I suppose we could start doing that again. We could just take off those long things and just collect water.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the reason why people got discouraged from doing that was because of the fact of mosquitoes.
Yeah, there is that. You have to be careful of mosquitoes.
But if you're careful of mosquitoes and put a fish or two in there that likes mosquito carp, and it's another way of handling it. But if you do have this sort of drought, and because the house is closer and there's some things you can do on a small scale you can't do on a large scale.
Absolutely, yeah.
You can preserve the water you're using. You can use less water. You can deal with it. You can preserve a garden, and if you do that, then you'll have fresh fruits and vegetables that aren't going to cost you an arm and a leg, even if a drought really takes hold of the central area. You may not have perfect results, but you may have better results than the main farmers in your area, and if that happens, at least you'll have fresh fruits and vegetables.
Well, I mean, we may probably already experiencing higher prices from what happened last year.
We are.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be cooking in new price increases. Certainly there's some people who believe this might be the year of our inflation. That gas prices will go up, water, and we're going to start seeing a weather. They're saying that basically we may be seeing like a weather tax in our food, a drought tax in our food, a flooding tax in our food, a wildfire tax in our food.
Mm.
Hmm? So,
well, we have been seeing some more extremes of weather, that's for sure.
Right. And so growing local food is a great way to get that sort of nutritional gold mine that you need, the food that you may need, and be able to save money and, in fact, impress your family and friends.
And not only that, but you actually know what you're growing and you know what you're eating, because,
mm-hmm.
as we talked about before, you know, if you don't want to buy stuff from the store because you don't know for sure what's in it, or how it was grown. This way you know how it's grown anyway. You may not know how the seeds were grown, but you do know how you did it. So I guess that's
right.
That's something anyway. No.
And you're going to get a start of encouraging yourself and being able to deal with food for yourself. I mean, this idea of not having GMO foods and sort of this sort of idea of it. And it really is kind of important if you really want to know what you're eating. And the big thing is that you can then recycle a lot of the material that you're making in your house into compost, into soil, and to, you know, keep that loop tight and make sure that you have nutritional food. You know, because the food that you're growing is probably far more nutritional than the food that you're buying in the grocery store, unless you're really paying premium prices, and then even then.
Well, it's got to be fresher, if nothing else.
Well, yeah. I mean, with the tomatoes, I know the trick. They you know, no tomato gets picked red anymore. They're picked green.
Mm-hmm.
Right as they begin to turn to red because they want to save it. But now they're picked green a lot of times. And they're using gases to ripen them when they need it to. So there is that lack of freshness, even though it looks like it's fresh.
Right.
They use food dyes on some of this stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that makes people so nervous about organic foods. Because we talk about how tasty they can be. We talked about, you know, how pretty they can be. But sometimes, let's be honest, they don't look as good as the ones in the grocery store.
No, they're not. They're not made. They're not. They don't pick every single one that looks good, and they usually have flaws of some kind.
And I think some pretty interesting flaws. Like cucumbers, that are different kind of weird shapes. Zucchinis that have become twisted. I had one zucchini that kind of twisted itself last year.
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of interesting. We ate it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a perfectly good zucchini, but you would never see that in a store. They would just take it and throw it into a canning company and go, oh, that's not attractive. So when people grow their food, sometimes it isn't as manicured and as pruned and as perfected as the stuff in the grocery stores. You know, so people go, well, why should I pay more for this? This is ugly if this doesn't look as good. Because it tastes better. It may be better nutritionally.
Mm-hmm. And because you have to pay more for stuff like that. That's all. It takes more to grow it. It takes more time. It takes more energy.
Well,
it takes more...
Actually, I'm finding out now, the various farms in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
they're saying they're very cost competitive with the grocery stores, even coming underneath them because of the local nature of it. We're not paying huge amounts of transportation.
Okay, well then that's a start then in changing.
And it's not
that.
Going.
You
and
know,
it's not going through as many hands.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing. How much of our food passes through other hands before it gets to us?
Well, and you're also working on more organic compost and stuff that's cheaper. That's your goal, is to produce a cheaper organic compost.
Well, yeah, absolutely. My particular goal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in Chicago on March 1st, please come to my event at the plant at 4 to 8 p.m. at the plant, greenevening.eventbrite.com, greenevening.eventbrite.com. Find out more information. Certainly, yeah, I want to be able to turn out compost because a ton of compost can grow a lot of fruits and vegetables. It can help really healthy up the garden. And if I can start producing that much compost, say, every day, I certainly can then help a lot of the green farms. I certainly do think that, yes, one of my big goals is to make organic compost, fertilizers, and aquatic teas, as well as pesticides from worm castings at a much higher rate.
At a competitive price, right? Because
at
that
a competitive
is part
price.
Of the, yeah, that's part of the thing, why organic costs more.
Well, yeah, and I'm a big believer in the big believer that, you know, we can, it doesn't, just because it's organic, it doesn't have to always be more expensive. It doesn't have to be. It just doesn't. I mean, that's just learning how to change the system. I'm trying to think of Bucky. Never mind. I'm not going to butcher a quote right now, but I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
But I certainly do believe it is, and I do. I want. I certainly do want to do well by trying to do it, and the only way I'm going to do that is by becoming a service to the community. Like I'm talking to Starbucks, and man, they produce a lot of coffee grounds.
I suppose they do.
Mm-hmm. And so, and if I can get that done, I think that that would be, not only would it make, it'd be great for me, because then it would finally give me another, my third career. And so then that point, but here's what Buckminster Fuller said, and I think this is true. All of humanity now has the option to make it successfully and sustainably by virtue of having our minds, discovering principles and being able to employ these principles to do more with less. That was Buckminster Fuller, and I think that's a big important idea that we all can do this. And so gardening for you not only can it make you save money by having the vegetables that you want, it not only helps save money by being really good nutrition, which is one of those things that you really need to have a healthier life, but you can also we're therefore basically helping people understand, it will help you actually even make an income. If you are really good at this, you might find that you want to go back to farming. And it does seem like farming is making a comeback. And it is possible for you to actually make an income as a farmer once again. Whereas somebody who works with foodstuffs, I think the time of the grocery store is, we'll always have the grocery stores, but I think we're going to start seeing people utilize it. They're going to start utilizing this capability, and I think that this is a great time, and I think it's a great time to be involved with this.
Seems like there's a lot of people that are starting to turn back towards it again, or bring it into the cities more, maybe, is another
mm-hmm.
thing. There's a lot. You were saying that you were in Evanston today, and they were asking you about the plant and wanting to know if they could do something similar in their city as well.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really cool. And they're talking about doing it in their city. I mean, and this is a project that hasn't come fully out there, but yeah, so people are so excited about it now that they're ready to go ahead and do that. That they're ready to move on to those next projects. That other cities are saying already that, you know, maybe we need one of these projects. Maybe we need to have more local food production. And even if it only takes a small percentage, the problem is that our food is so big and so awesome and so large an industry. Some people floated out to me that I did not realize that the entire food industry in the United States is a $50 billion a year industry.
I'm surprised it's that small, to be honest.
Well, when you think about it, that's over almost $2,000. It's almost $2,000 per person in the United States.
Per year?
Per year.
That doesn't seem like very much.
It doesn't, does it?
No.
But
I mean, isn't the pet industry, like, the same?
It's pretty big, yeah. And this probably doesn't include all food production. This is probably just food production. Not restaurants, not all the other ways we spend money.
I see. Okay.
This is food production. It's not even all the processing we do, I bet. I don't bet you it doesn't include all that.
No, I got
it. So if you can just move a small percentage of that into organics, that's $500 million. Just 1% becomes $500 million.
Wow.
And that means...
That sounds big to me for just 1%.
Just for 1%. And that means that you can employ as many as 10,000 people with that. And so that's just what a small percentage of this urban farming can do. This is what gardening can do. So if you can just move in a small amount of it, then you have a really good obligation really good ability to make a difference in your local economy, preserving dollars there. Because dollars spent locally are dollars that stay around.
It sounds like a good idea. Hopefully a lot of people will, you know, try and take it up this year.
And I hope so, too. And if you, you know, if you want to find out more, check out my new webpage, paganics.com, paganics.com. You know, like the bunch of pages that Marianne and I are a part of, you can always find us here. My Mystic Gem is a great place to occasionally find things. Right, Marianne?
I hope more than occasionally, but yes.
Well, you talk about all sorts of things on that page.
Well, and then there's always, you have Nature's Little Recyclers as well. Your Facebook page.
That's true. And so that you can, and so you, what do you have coming up this week?
You know, I really don't know. I'm kind of feel like I've lost some time, and I actually, I'm trying to finish up a custom order that I talked about with a lady a couple of weeks ago, and I finally found what she was looking for, and I'm trying to get it done. And I'm just kind of a little bit discombobulated, but I should be back in form pretty soon. I actually bought some their treated quartz. I got them from... remember where I got them from, Malaysia or somewhere like that. I don't think that it was, I don't know. It was someplace in Asia that I picked up some different colors of quartz that have been treated, like red and green, and they're really pretty. And so I've been kind of working on some of those. That's what I was doing before I got sick this last time, was using some of those. So I hope to have more of that stuff listed next week, this week, soon.
Excellent. Well, I hope so for you too. I do too. And for me, the biggest thing probably, I'm going to work on the worms all week and try to get more messages out and then watch people rebuild Witch School. And on Sunday, I'm going to do a show on the science of brainwashing.
Oh, well, that should be interesting. Isn't that the same as neuralistic programming, or is that different?
Well, we're going to talk, the difference, neurolinguistic program is the techniques that you can use as part of brainwashing, but it's got other good things. So this is time we're going to talk about brainwashing as a whole, how it's done, and how the people get caught up in it.
Okay.
And I think one of the big things I think about it is going to be very interesting that people don't realize that several people around that are walking around have already been brainwashed and don't even know it. In fact, the majority of people have been brainwashed at least once and don't even know it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Sounds scary.
It could be, but we'll also tell you how to tell if you've been brainwashed. We'll talk about all of that on Sunday.
Okay.
Otherwise, between now and then, there's a ton of great shows on every night at Pagan Tonight. But I think with that, we're going to say good night.
Okay. Good night, everybody.
And hang on here to Blue Fire Witch, as she is going to take over from here.
Pagans Tonight Radio Network needs your help in creating a pagan interfaith library in South Africa. The Karelian Nativist Tradition is sponsoring the creation of this library, but all paths are more than welcome to participate in this effort. Why South Africa? Great question. One book in South Africa costs the equivalent of 2 days of food there, and safety for pagans is also a concern. The library is seeking interfaith nonfiction and fiction books in good condition. Also welcome are pagan and interfaith CDs and DVDs, tarot card decks, divination tools, etc. Please note, due to international shipping rules, we cannot accept herbs, incense, candles, or perishables. So what's this got to do with you? There are several ways you and your community can help us succeed. First, you can donate some of your pagan books, whether fiction or nonfiction. Look at your bookshelf and ask yourself, if you haven't read a book or referred to it in a year or more, do you really need to hang on to it? Do you belong to a group? Then consider holding a book drive as part of your group's normal activities. Do you have a circle of pagan friends? You can promote the book mission by spreading the word through email and social media networks like Facebook and Twitter. The deadline for shipping donations is March 31st, 2013. All donations will be combined and shipped to South Africa in April 2013. Ship your items to Lori Denman, 11250 Old St. Augustine Road, Suite 15, number 150, Jacksonville, Florida, 32257, USA. Second, you can join paperbackswap.com and create credits, which can be used to get books to a library. You can request whatever books you like to be shipped to the postal address I just mentioned, or you can donate your credits to the library itself so they can fill out the selection. Please donate credits to Lori D. Her username is GSCABOOSE. And finally, you can make a monetary donation to help cover the shipping costs to South Africa at carillion.com/donate.htm. Please be sure to earmark your donation for the South Africa Book Mission. To find out more about the mission, please visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/groups/CNTBooks. Or email your questions to cntbookmission@gmail.com.
Okay, happy Monday, radio friends. Welcome to the Path Less Traveled. This is Blue Fire Witch. And with me today, we have a special guest host, Catherine Horn, who's going to be with us talking. So welcome, Catherine, to the Path Less Traveled.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Blue Fire Witch. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well, except for there's a lot of snow on the ground. I think there's probably even more snow on the ground where you are, though. It sounds like you had a little bit of power trouble tonight.
I did. It was raining terribly hard tonight, and then all of a sudden, before I know it, a couple minutes later, down comes the snow in large clumps.
It was rather nice earlier today. It was really nice. It was like in the 40s. I went out with a light jacket on. I actually wore a skirt and showed off my nice legs. And, you know, then all this happened. And, you know, craziness. You know, thank goodness we have a fridge full of groceries. We don't have to go anywhere, you know what I mean?
But, yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot to talk about tonight, so we're going to get going with it. There's a lot of people in the chat room, but it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of people chatting. But this might get them going. For those of you who have not seen it, earlier today, Tucker Carlson on Fox News was hosting a show, and they did a segment on their show called PC Police, essentially suggesting that an organization is being overly politically correct or doing something for the sake of political correctness, which I never really understood. The term politically correct is essentially like it's a negative or pejorative term for people respecting diversity and respecting the rights and equality of all people.
Mm-hmm.
And so political correctness, it's really kind of an outdated term. I mean, people use it in the 90s to talk about essentially acknowledging people for the sake of acknowledgement, even if you don't really support their cause. But really, I think it's more than that. I think nowadays, people would more recognize it as supporting diversity, supporting equality, and things like that, or just being sane.
yeah.
So for those of you who haven't seen the video, I'm posting it right now in the chat room. Essentially, Tucker Carlson and his guest, whose name is Tammy Bruce. I think she's a radio show host, but she's also a consultant for Fox News. Went on a tirade about the University of Missouri adding to their calendar, they have this diversity calendar that they post publicly, not just for the staff, but for the students and anybody who wants to read it, that has religious holidays that they don't necessarily cancel classes or anything like that. Tucker Carlson and Tammy Bruce said that people wouldn't schedule exams on those days. And that's not necessarily true either. I think that the main goal of this calendar is to show recognition to these holidays so that if somebody has to skip class or skip an exam as a result of one of those holidays, that they are public knowledge. So, and they're recognized by the school. So if somebody, for example, if there is an exam on, you know, March 20th, for example, on their calendar they have posted that is spring equinox, and then it's recognized by Wiccans and Pagans. And so if they have an exam scheduled on that day and a Wiccan or Pagan comes, you know, beforehand and says, hey, I'm going to be gone for that day because I'm going to be doing a festival or a ritual or something like that, that they can get a pass for that exam and they can take it at a later date. I think that's basically the gist of why they have the calendar. But they were really kind of they were very critical of paganism and Wicca and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They were pretty they didn't really know what they were talking about. Tammy Bruce at one point made a comment, well, if atheists and pagans, you know, venerate nature, then isn't every day a holiday? I mean, how stupid is that, really? I mean, think about
yeah.
that. If you believe in a God and your God is with you every day, isn't every day a holiday? You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense, right?
No, it really doesn't.
There's five holy days in every religion. Ours is no exception. I think most pagans probably do some sort of religious thing every day, if not every week, like Christians do. But we have our high holy days just like any other religion would. And so I don't understand, other than just pure bigotry, as Afterthought was saying, they're just being bigots. You know, I don't understand any other kind of logical reason to attack a college for recognizing the religions of their students, other than to just be bigots, right? I mean,
right.
At one point they said that this is just an assault or offense on Christianity. How so? How is the presence of other religions, which is acknowledged in the Bible, the presence of other religions is acknowledged in the Bible. So how is the presence of other religions an assault on Christianity?
It's really,
you know,
not.
Or what they call the establishment, which, you know, it's not necessarily the establishment as it gets weaker every year. but, you know, it just, they did something out of just pure bigotry. There's always room for stupid, Afterthought says. Yeah, it really was. It was like something out of a different time frame, you know. Afterthought's talking about Archie Bunker. It really does kind of translate back to that. I think even Archie Bunker would be embarrassed about, you know, how ignorant they were being on air, you know. They didn't bother to, you know, it didn't one thing if they would have had a Wiccan response. They would have called Selena Fox. They would have called somebody from the Aquarian Tabernacle Church. They would have called Don Lewis or, you know, somebody else of that caliber who can speak for a large majority of people, not necessarily all of paganism, because I don't really think there's anybody who can do that, but,
no.
You know, somebody who has a large organization, who is a spokesperson for a large number of people within our group, if they would have had some sort of, you know, comment by them, or at least, you know, bothered to research what they were talking about, I think they could have saved themselves a lot of embarrassment.
Well, right. Well, yeah, and Selena Fox and Patrick McCall both have history with speaking on behalf of the pagan community. I mean, because, for example, the Pentacle incident with that Patrick Stewart guy, whose last request when he died, he wanted the Pentacle on his gravestone, and there was a huge fight over it. Selena Fox stepped up for that, or Patrick McCollum with his case in California. They both have a history of doing things like that for the pagan community, and I'm sure they would easily step forward if that were the case. But while we're still on the subject, I did actually go on the Fox News website, and I can actually post a link to it because it actually has more of what Tammy Bruce said. Because she claims that this whole thing with the Missouri campus is indicative of an unbecoming societal shift. And she says that it seems as though that they're looking for excuses for people to not take their commitment seriously in school. And claims that it's beyond political correctness and that it's an excuse to do nothing, and then tries to compare it with societal nihilism.
I don't really get that, you know. I mean, Wicca and pagan religions are just as serious religions as anything else. She has no scholarly or, you know, any observational evidence to suggest that Wicca or pagan or any other pagan path is less serious or less of a religion than, you know, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, or anything like that. Just because she doesn't know about it and she hasn't heard about it doesn't mean it's not legitimate.
Right. Well, she admitted that she didn't know any pagans. She said that she's never met one.
Oh, and so, of course, if she hasn't met one, then I suppose that makes everything right in the world, right? Well, if she hasn't met one, maybe she should just refrain from speaking on it.
She should. This is the biggest issue, I think, with Fox News, is that they look up the they look up a little bit of information and think they have everything. Because the thing with a lot of these people is that they start listing off all of these holidays that are basically every single holiday to every different denomination. And I think what they didn't realize is that paganism is full of denominations just like Christianity or any other religion is. But they start saying that there's all these holidays, and paganism have so many holidays. I don't even think the pagans know all their holidays. The thing is that there's only eight holidays for paganism. Some paths call them different things, but they're basically similar. I mean, some traditions have slightly more holidays, but it's basically indicative of the region that the religion starts in, you know, like Greece, Germany, Ireland, etc. So,
The thing is that, you know, there's more than eight pagan holidays. There's the Wiccan holidays, there's eight Sabbaths, there's eight main Sabbats. But, you know, depending on what pagan path you have different holidays. You know, the Greek calendar, there's lots of different holidays and stuff like that. But not all of them are like high holy days where you would, like, take the day off work or not take an exam because of it, you know. I mean, like, if you've been to college and you're listening to the show right now, you know, raise your hand if you've taken an exam on one of your holidays, because I know I have, you know.
I have, too.
I mean, most of the time you don't take the whole day off. You know, raise your hand if you worked on one of your holidays, you know. We don't normally take every single holiday off. But I think that, like I said, it's there for recognition in case somebody needs to, you know, there's nothing, I think, sinister about saying, I need this day off because of this holiday. I'm going to take the exam a few days later or a few days before, you know. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, and I know a lot of pagans. When I was in my college, there were pagans there, and they had to take their exams and tests and do homework and stuff on their holidays. But their mindset is just, you know, even though it's my holiday today, I'll just do it tomorrow. I'm sure the gods will understand. I mean, you know, they're not going to hang us for not celebrating the exact day. So,
well, that's it, is that a lot of times the observations that we do end up being on a weekend because that's when people have to get together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at, you know, for example, if you go to witchfox.com and you look at the events at any state, you'll see a lot of pagan holidays being observed on a weekend, even if it's, you know, say, you know, like I said, you know, like March 20th, which there's a, you know, right, this year, March 20th is on a Wednesday. I can guarantee you that there's going to be a lot of celebrations for the spring equinox on the 16th or 17th or 23rd or 24th. You know, because people have stuff to do that they can't put off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically,
You might do something small on that specific day, but you don't do your major celebration on that day if it's during the weekend, especially if you plan on communing with others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I'm posting the chat room right now. The actual link to the calendar that the University of Missouri, they call themselves Mizzou, you know, University of Missouri has up on their diversity website, right? It's their diversity page. They list different places of worship. There's a couple pagan places as well as religion, you know, other different religions and stuff like that. And it's not just the big three and paganism that's listed here. They've got Hindu holidays. They've got Baha'i holidays on here. So, you know, I don't really kind of get why would single out just Wiccans and pagans being that I think Baha'i is quite a small faith as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. The way I see it is that Fox News is notoriously conservative-leaning, and so they demonize and discriminate everyone and everything that falls outside of their black and white cut-and-dry box. And you can see evidence of that every time you turn on Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bill O'Reilly is I mean, he's horrible with that, especially. And if he's proven wrong, he completely denies it or he changes the subject. He does that a lot, especially, I forgot, what's the name of the Daily host, a Daily Show host? I forgot his name.
Jon Stewart.
Yeah, him. He's been on that show multiple times, and he's given Bill O'Reilly a run for his money, and Bill O'Reilly is always changing the subject when he gets caught in a corner.
Well, you know, I don't even know if Bill O'Reilly would stoop so low to make these comments. You know, Bill O'Reilly said a lot of stupid things in his time, but I don't even know if he would, you know, stoop so low. I could be wrong, but, you know.
I wouldn't put it past him, honestly.
I you know, Astrakov made the comment that, you know, that at first he thought it was an Onion thing, you know, which the Onion is like a satire news site, and that the Onion essentially he thinks is a better news source than Fox News, which I completely agree with. It's really sad that so many people use Fox News as their only news source, because I really
mm-hmm.
think it leaves them with a skewed perspective, you know. I get a lot of news from different sources. I watch CNN. I watch my local news shows. I also watch some MSNBC, you know, and things like that. I don't really understand the whole idea of getting all of your news from one source, especially when that source is so obviously flawed.
Yeah, I don't know. Crimson posted in the chat room something that I actually really agree with. She said that Fox News singled out Wiccans and pagans because they assume every other religion that isn't Christian falls under that umbrella. They're too uneducated to know the difference. And I agree. I don't know if it's so much on education. It's just pure ignorance. They do a little bit of research, and then they assume, oh, hey, this is all we need to know. That's pretty much the gist of it. And the evidence you need to support that is pretty much right there, cut and dry, when you watch the clips. Take it from the show today.
Well, yeah, and the fact that nobody on Fox News has bothered to, you know, refute what they have said, to require that they make an apology and things like that, essentially makes all of Fox News liable for what they put on their air. If they're not going to require that somebody make an apology for what I could see as just absolute bigotry towards a small religious community, then, you know, they're just as liable for those comments as Tucker Carlson and Tammy Bruce are. Now, there's a couple different petitions that have come
mm-hmm.
up. One of them's on causes, the other one's on change.org and things like that. One thing that I did, and, you know, the requirements for the White House petition site have changed since we did our Patrick McCollum petition back in 2011. It used to be that you just had to get 5,000 signatures. Now you have to get 100,000 signatures.
What?
It's been 20-fold. Yeah, 100,000 signatures. I still think we can do it. I still think we have over a month. We have until spring equinox. It's actually the day that the petition ends. Okay? How fitting,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I made this petition. I'm not going to flaunt. Firewitch made this, okay? And if you want to sign it, that's fine. I would like if you do. You know, I'm going to post it right now in the chat room. If you're listening in archive, all the links that we're talking about will be available after the show on the Path Less Travel page, so you can go and look for it there. The White House petition. Basically says that we want, I'm going to read the whole thing the way that I wrote it, right? We petition the Obama administration to rebuke the statements made by Fox News, Tucker Carlson, and Tammy Bruce denigrating Wiccans and pagans. On February 18, 2013, Tucker Carlson and his special guest, Tammy Bruce, denigrated the pagan community by suggesting that the inclusion of of by suggesting that the inclusion of Wiccan and Pagan holidays on a calendar published by the University of Missouri is an assault on Christianity. In addition, Tucker and Tammy made offensive, generalizing, and inaccurate statements about Wiccans and the overall pagan community, for which they have not apologized. President Obama and his administration recently condemned a video that was anti-Muslim in nature. We believe that they should offer a similar response in support of the pagan community by publicly condemning their actions. Please sign, ask President Obama to acknowledge the statements like theirs are wrong. And then I post a link to the video showing what they said. So it doesn't have that many signatures yet. But that doesn't mean that it can't.
Right.
Today is the first day for it. So far, there's very few signatures, but it doesn't mean that we can't make that goal. I mean, I believe that there's at least 1 million pagans in the United States alone. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why we can't get 1/10 of us to sign this petition. Not to mention, you don't have to be pagan to sign it, okay? You can be an appalled Christian. You can be a Jew. You can be an atheist. You can be a Muslim. You can be anybody who thinks that it's wrong for people who have a voice on air to go on air and use that to denigrate a small religious community.
Right. Well, and I'm just going to add to what you just said, Anastasia, that Facebook and Twitter are very powerful weapons created on the internet, and I think that whether you're of the pagan persuasion or of a different religious persuasion altogether, you agree that what Fox News said and did is wrong, then you should really use those tools to our benefit, because all it really takes is just a couple shares from you, and then some shares from your friends, and then their friends, and it'll constantly spread, and eventually we'll get all the signatures we need, and hopefully we'll get a statement from the president or the government condemning what Fox News said, and hopefully we'll get an apology.
Well, right, you know, I think that if he can step out and condemn a video that was very offensive to Muslims, that he can condemn Tucker Carlson and Tammy Bruce for what they said on Fox News about Wiccans and pagans, right? I mean, I really don't see much difference between the two, you know, except them being different religious communities.
Right. Well, I think the other thing that we should mention, too, is that people that are listening or listening to it after the show, that if they decide that they want to write to these people and talk about their outrage, they should do it civilly, because if you attack them out of anger and just go on this huge tyrannical rant, it's going to make the rest of the community look better, and it's just going to justify what they're saying and doing against paganism in general.
Right. It's going to make them feel like they're justified in denigrating us.
Right.
But if we respect, if we hold ourselves in a respectful manner and put out statements like the one that there was a statement by the Lady Liberty League, and I'm going to see if I can't come up with it, where they talked about Fox News and the coverage that they did on the Pentacle Quest back in 2007, and how they were impressed by how well they covered that back in 2007, and how disappointed they were to see people like Tucker Carlson and Tammy Bruce were employed by the station to make such bigoted and ignorant statements towards the pagan community. You know, that there's really no logical reason to do that. It's just pure bigotry, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I don't even think that the term politically correct is essentially a relevant term anymore. I don't hear anybody really using that except for people who are suffering from cognitive dissonance trying to justify their own bigotry.
Yeah. Apparently, the Lady Liberty League made a statement already against Fox News.
I got through saying that, yeah.
I wasn't aware of that. Thank you, Crimson.
Well, yeah, it was... they made a statement, essentially just what I said, that they were impressed by the footage in 2007 of the Fox News did covering the Pinnacle Quest, but now mm-hmm. they seem to be very disappointed in what was said on regarding Wiccans and Pagans on their show. You know, there's really no call for it. You know, other than just pure bigotry. There's no really good thing to say about it, except for that they're hoping that their audience is full of ignorant bigots who don't like pagans, I suppose. You know, maybe they're mm-hmm. They're trying to play to a bigot crowd. But I got to tell you that bigotry is on its way out.
It is, gradually.
The more educated people get, the less bigoted they are. The new and young generations embrace diversity and tolerance more than the old ones do. So if you're looking to cater to an audience that kind of identifies itself with that type of bigotry, you're essentially looking to identify yourself with a dying audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I agree completely. And the thing is that if schools and colleges and such continue to teach kids young and older about what paganism and the other quote-unquote minority religions are in this country or in this world, then people are going to start understanding it more, and they'll be less likely to act out of ignorance, which is, I think that's one of the bigger reasons why people always act out against paganism, is because they don't understand it still. I mean, if you talk to somebody about paganism, they'll either ask you what it is, or they'll think they know what it is, and they'll condemn you for it.
Right.
That happens nine times out of ten.
I'm posting a link right now to the statement. I went to the Lady Liberty League page on Circle Sanctuary, and they posted their statement there. I can read it for those people who are listening on their phones and things like that. Bear with me for just a second, and I'll pull it up. I posted it in the chat room for those people. There's a link to the actual statement there. So here it is. It was released today. The Lady Liberty League denounces the ignorant and unprofessional statements made by Fox News commentators this weekend. The statements made by Fox News personalities, including Anna Koyman, Clayton Morris, Tucker Carlson, and Tammy Bruce, were in regard to the University of Missouri's 2011 decision to include Wiccan and other holidays, along with the holidays of many other faiths, in the university's guide to religion. We are deeply disappointed that Fox's leadership would choose to allow such ill-informed statements on the air. The commentary of the Fox News personalities over the weekend betrayed not only the deep ignorance about paganism and Wicca, but also a fundamental disdain for the nature of religious diversity in the United States and the Establishment Clause in the United States Constitution. Paganism and Wicca, not Wiccanism, as stated by Tucker Carlson, are contemporary religious practices that include an honoring of the divine as imminent in nature. Nature religions are growing in significant numbers, not just within the United States, but significantly in the UK, Australia, South America, and Europe. The Lady Liberty League is a program of Circle Sanctuary founded to dispel misconceptions and combat discrimination against pagans, Wiccans, and other nature religion practitioners. Reverend Selena Fox, executive director of the Liberty League, said in 2006 and 2007, Fox News was among the media sources that covered the quest to have equal rights for Wiccan and pagan U.S. military veterans, and they did so in a factual and respectful manner. We are extremely disappointed at the ill-informed and disrespectful tone of their coverage about the academic accommodation of Wiccan and pagan holidays. We hope that Fox News will adapt and stay with a policy of respect for diverse faiths and philosophies in the United States. And it goes on a little bit further to talk about that. That's the gist of the statement. And if you want to read the whole thing, you're welcome to do so. I posted a link for it, and I'll post a link for it on the Half Less Travel page on Facebook as well. But anyway, we've been talking about this for a while. There seems to be a lot of buzz in the chat room about it. So I'm going to open it up to people who want to call in, if you want to call in and talk about it. The call-in number is area code 347-308-8222. If you want to call in and talk about this, you can. We'll probably be talking about it for a few more minutes unless we get somebody else to call in and make some comments about it. And then we're going to switch over to our main topic for today, which is going to be chief deities, and we're going to talk about that for the last half of the show. Right now, we're going to pause for commercial break. We're going to have some music, and we're going to have a commercial, and then we'll be back on the air. So we're going to listen to Jack in the Green by Coyote Run. Well, perhaps not. That one doesn't seem to be working. I apologize. Okay.
Commercial dysfunction or dysfunctional?
I don't set up the music on the board. I just press the button. So apparently that one does not seem to be working, so we'll go to a different one. We will listen to Wintry Queen by Coyote Run.
Beacon, you can She'll not weary or weaken till she finds her with her time king. Now the leprous white lady in the dread of the law.
Than an incredible ritualist, be an effective leader for your community. My book, Bridging the Gap, Working Within the Dynamics of Pagan Groups and Society, is geared towards filling the common gaps in our community by using techniques as tools to assess, understand, and work with the changing dynamics of any group or coven by using common counseling techniques. The book discusses tools around anger management, assessment, boundaries, behavior shaping, restorative justice, conflict resolution, maintaining a healthy group mind, and mentoring. As paganism evolves, it is becoming clearer that being an incredible ritualist is not all that is needed to be a competent leader or member of our pagan community. It is necessary for us pagans to have tools and skills in dealing with a myriad of issues that can plague any group or society. Pick up your copy of Bridging the Gap by Crystal Blanton today at your local metaphysical shop or order through www.crystalblanton.com, Amazon, or the Emanian Press website.
Okay, we're back. Welcome to the Path Less Traveled. If you haven't been able to keep up with us this hour, we've been discussing the incident on air with Fox News with Tucker Carlson and Tammy Bruce. For a couple other people who mentioned it too, I haven't seen the footage on that, but I have seen the footage for Tucker Carlson and Tammy Bruce and what they said regarding Wiccans and Pagans being included on the University of Missouri's religious diversity calendar. And so if you have anything that you want to add to that, there's been a lot of people talking about it in the chat room. We have a call-in number, too. It's 347-308-8222. Did you have any other remarks that you wanted to make, Catherine, about this?
I think I've pretty much said all I really planned on saying on the matter. Asking people to if they plan on stating their outrage personally as opposed to just merely signing a petition, that they should consider that when they do that, that they are representing, whether they like it or not, the pagan community, because the people that they're writing to are very ignorant in regards to this, obviously. So just be civil and courteous as you can to try and represent the pagan community in a light and good manner.
Well, you know, I think that there's a way to be civil and get your point across.
Mm-hmm.
I went on Tucker Carlson's Facebook page earlier today and made a comment essentially saying that his comments were not scholarly, that they were not researched, and he has no business calling himself a journalist. But I didn't swear, and I didn't, you know, I conducted myself in a civil manner. But I did say, you know, I did personally go after him. And I think that, you know, it's okay to say things like that as long as we're not being vulgar about it. You know what
right.
I mean? We need to stay away from vulgarity and kind of immaturity, because they're going to pounce on that. They're going to say, see, look, these people can't be taken seriously.
Right.
You know, and they're going to use that to justify their actions, and we don't want that.
Right. It points them as a martyr, or gives them a right to say we're right or we're the victim here. Look at them attacking us. And it basically makes you out to be the bully and them the victim, and they're going to try and cling to, well, that's our freedom of speech right, so we have a right to say this because this is our opinion, you know, how that's been
right,
going.
But I think when people are on the air, they have a certain responsibility to make sure that their information is accurate,
well,
to make sure
the news.
That they conduct themselves in a professional manner, and I think that what Tucker Carlson and Tammy Bruce did, for example, was not professional, nor was it, really a mature thing to do, you know. It wasn't even really relevant, because this calendar has been out since 2011, and I don't know, other than it being, you know, a slow news day, why it is that they bothered to pounce on this now, 2 years later.
Right. Maybe they just came across it at a late time. Who knows? But regardless of whether or not why,
it's dying. Fox News is dying, and they have to rile up their base, because after the last election, they were embarrassed. Mm-hmm. They had people like, several people, including Karl Rove, who was a paid correspondent for Fox News, were so positively sure that Mitt Romney was going to win by a landslide in the election.
Mm-hmm.
That when that didn't happen, and in actuality, really the opposite happened, they became embarrassed. They put all their eggs in one basket, and
mm-hmm.
they lost a lot of listenership because of that. People who thought that Fox News could do no wrong all of a sudden saw them as a flawed organization that they are. And so with that, now what they're trying to do is they're trying to scramble and rile up their base by playing upon their prejudices. One of them is anti-pagan and anti-witchcraft. And I think they think that we don't have the power to fight back, that we don't have a voice, so that they can say whatever they want about us and essentially put scot-free. You know, if they were to say something about Jews or Muslims or some other faith that they believe is more widely recognized and more widely accepted, then they would have, you know, more problems with it. But they have no qualms whatsoever attacking what they see as a small and insignificant religious community, because they don't realize that we have the power of the interwebs and that that we could fight back too. They think that we're insignificant, and we need to show them that we're not.
Right. Yeah, because the thing is, especially if one pagan is attacked, you deal with the whole community. That's just basically how pagans work. You mess
uh-huh.
with one of us, you mess with all of us. And I think throughout history, or especially over the last probably the last century, you've kind of demonstrated that we will stand up for our own.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Okay, so. It doesn't look like we're going to get any callers on the subject, but we have had quite a bit of action in the chat room about this. I do appreciate everybody's comments. I love it when, if you don't listen to the show live, you can listen to the show archived, and that's great. We appreciate our archived listeners. But I do think that you're missing part of the show when you're not able to experience the chat room. The chat room is essentially the behind-the-scenes action that's going on in the show, and all the kind of, you know, different commentary I think is very colorful, and it adds to the show. And so if you're able to listen live on Blog Talk Radio, by all means do so, because it only adds to your show experience. I think we've got some great shows on Pagans tonight. I think they're even better because of the chat room. So all of you guys, I thank you for your comments and everything like that. I think it's been great. We're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to talk a little bit about chief deities, since that was supposed to be our subject tonight, and kind of got bogarted by by current events. Tonight's topic is chief deities. The reason that I chose this topic is that we're right now in the month of Zeus on our temple calendar, and we're doing different festivals to Zeus. We just got done with our Lupercalia celebration, which was partial in his honor, and we also do weekly processions to Zeus as well. He is the chief deity, of course, of Greece. And if you're a Roman follower, you would refer to him as Jupiter. And Zeus is, I think he's a little different than other chief deities in that he's not a creator deity. He's got lots of children and things like that, and he did create a lot of the other gods, but he didn't create the universe itself. The universe itself came before Zeus. And I think that's quite interesting. A lot of times, your chief deities are the created deities, but Zeus didn't take part in that. Catherine is, she's studying to be a priestess, I believe, is it the Northern Lakes Temple? Is that what it is?
Yep, but okay. The Northern Lakes Temple is a temple that has multiple paths within it, mostly Wiccan, being that Wicca is one of the largest pagan denominations known. But personally, I identify as a druid following the Irish hearth. I have been studying a little bit under ADF off and on. My schedule doesn't permit me to do it full time. However, I do identify as a druid, and I do practice when I get the chance. Once my schedule dies down, I'll be able to be a full practicing druid. But like I said, it's the Irish hearth.
Tell me a little bit about the chief Celtic deities.
Yes, with Irish hearth, it's Donna is the mother goddess, and she's the name Tuatha De Danann, which translated from Gaelic to English is the tribe of Danu, or Donna as it's pronounced in Gaelic. However, who is considered the king of the Tuatha De Danann is Nuada.
Okay,
and he's often referred to as Nuada of the Silver Hand.
Okay, can you explain to me explain to our audience why he's called that?
Because in the war against the Fomorians, he had his hand cut off. So one of the other gods, the name escapes me at the moment. Created a hand of silver for him after he lost his hand.
Interesting.
Yes.
It sounds familiar for those people who've read a little bit of modern fiction. There's two stories that come to mind where somebody had a silver hand that replaced their regular hand, or at least a hand made of metal. For those Star Wars fans that are out there, everybody, of course, Luke Skywalker lost his hand, and then it had it replaced, right? And Peter Pettigrew, on Harry Potter, had lost his hand when he cut it off to bring Voldemort fully to life, and then it was replaced with a silverish hand. For those mm-hmm. of you who read that series, but it's so interesting how modern fiction is, is inspired by real mythology.
Yeah. Caspaw in the chat room said that in Nordic, the wolf god Fenris bit off a god's hand. I'm not very familiar with Nordic mythology, so I don't know whose hand he bit off, but that's what Caspaw says.
I'm not completely familiar with that either. I think I've heard that story before, and he bit off Tyr's hand. Okay, that's interesting. Tyr's, I believe he's the war god, and I think our day, Tuesday, is named after him. He's not the chief deity. The chief deity of the Norse pantheon would be Odin, or depending on which region you hail from, it would be Woden. and that's where we get Wednesday from, is Woden's day.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Woden or Odin, depending on which, you know, you go by, is an interesting deity because he has one eye.
Mm-hmm. He traded it, didn't he?
I believe he traded it for something, but I don't remember what.
He had to give up something of his to drink from the Well of Wisdom, so he gave up his left eye.
Caspar was saying Odin, Woden, same guy, actually. Yeah, I know, it's a different pronunciation depending on where you come from, you know. It's kind of a lot like Zeus and Jupiter. Depending on where you're at, you call them something a little bit different. But for the most part, they're the same guy. So we pretty much recognize nowadays that the Greeks and the Romans had the same gods. There's a little bit different, you know, in some of the mythologies, but for the most part, we recognize that the deities are the same. And the same goes for the different Germanic tribes, you know, Saxon pronunciations and the different Germanic tribes in the north. The pronunciations are a little bit different, but the gods are pretty much the same. Yeah, same mm-hmm. gods, different names. That's what Caspar said. I totally agree with that. You know, there's it's interesting, I think, that today neo-paganism has a very, very much a feminist streak in it now.
Mm-hmm.
Most pagans today probably have their personal worship surrounding female deities more so than male deities. Modern Wicca probably puts the mother goddess probably a little, you know, and I guess it depends on the pantheon, on the tradition. Some of them, they're completely equal. But other ones, I think they give a little bit more veneration to the mother goddess than they would to the father god. And so I find it interesting that your more neo-pagan paths are focused more on feminine divinity, but when you go to the ancient paths, the chief deities, at least, are almost always males.
Mhm. Caspar actually brought this up in the chat room, and I've actually talked to you about this previously outside of the radio show. A lot of the mythology pertaining to the gods is actually very similar, which is very surprising considering that they're oceans apart.
Well, yeah, there's what like Caspar says, there's an idea of a holy flood, and you can find stories of a flood both in like Native American tradition and in like Middle Eastern tradition and things like that. And essentially a lot of different places, like if you go to Africa, there's a holy flood story. If you go to the Northern Isles, there's a holy flood story, and so forth and so on. You find a lot of those commonalities, especially if you've read A Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell, which I would recommend to any pagan. You know, it should be on your bookshelf. It really should. You know, go to Amazon, go to your local bookstore, pick it up. Because if you haven't read it, you really should. It's a mind opener. And for those of you who are really not readers, you really should read it anyways. But if you don't have the opportunity to buy it right away, you can go, and some of the videos are on YouTube. Somebody posted one in the chat, Afterfall did. You can also rent a series. Netflix, I think you can rent it from Netflix and a couple other places, where Bill Moyers, who of course works for PBS, did this long series of interviews with Joseph Campbell about different aspects of essentially universal mythology. Like
mm-hmm.
the idea of going into water being to going into like a dream state or the underworld or a version of death, you know, and that's a pretty universal theme. We've got the idea of cosmic egg, which exists in lots of different mythologies. You've got the world tree, whether it's the Yggdrasil or the tree of life or so forth and so on. You've got different tree mythologies that come from different areas of the globe, but yet share incredible similarities. And the power of myth is what it's called with Bill Moyer and Joseph Campbell. And it's kind of a very interesting series of videos, and I've watched them a couple times. I was lucky enough, my high school had a mythology class, and we watched them in high school. But if you weren't as lucky as me, you should pick them up at your local video store, or, you know, just do your free month of Netflix and subscribe to them that way, you know. You get like a 1 month free trial with Netflix. So if you can't afford much, you can at least do that. And I think it's only like $8 a month after that. So you can I think just about everybody can do that.
Yeah.
I don't want to do a big commercial for Netflix, but there is a lot of videos that you can get through them that you can't get other places. So, and they use them in streaming, which is totally cool. So I have a bunch of streaming. I haven't checked if some of the other video places have them. Like, I don't know if Hulu has them, and I don't know if Amazon Prime has them either, but I know Netflix does. So, but you might check those places as well and see if they have them. But,
Back on track.
We derailed. Anyway. Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Egyptian gods as well.
I was just going to say that.
And, right. Because there's a little bit of controversy over the chief deity of the Egyptian pantheon. Some people say it's Amun. Some people say it's Ra. Some people say it's Amun-Ra. And, you know, what I always understood is that Amun-Ra was kind of like the conglomeration of two previous deities, then recognized as the creator deity.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I understood it. But I do know that he's the creator deity. He's a sun god, considered to be like the all-shining one and things like that. So, you know, the Egyptian pantheon, I have a lot of friends who are Kemetic Orthodox, and I'd love to have a show where I have one of them come on and talk a little bit more about it, because the Egyptian pantheon is very fascinating. There's a lot of people who worship the Greek gods, who are part of like the temple of Greek gods, who also venerate the Egyptian gods. So you see a lot of crossover between those two communities. Especially with us, because we're one of the only organizations that honors the Greek gods, that accepts people who worship other gods as well.
I remember...
It's awesome like that, you know? We love you, no matter what you do.
I remember in school, one of the things... I mean, because the Greek and the Egyptian gods are so fascinating, I remember... in history class, we studied both of those pantheons very, very in-depth, which was surprising at the time because, you know, they usually don't talk about that kind of stuff, but they did. Of course, they've claimed that they're not worshipped anymore. I remember that I took a huge fascination with the Egyptian pantheon back then, and of course, I don't remember it as much anymore because this was back in middle school. But I remember I wasn't the only one who was super fascinated by it either, because the Egyptian pantheon is so fascinating. Their afterlife ideas and how animistic their deities are, it's crazy.
Yeah, there's a very close connection between spiritual animals and deities in the Egyptian pantheon, which I always found fascinating, more so than other religions. We're like, you know, in the Greek pantheon, for example, Zeus has a sacred animal. It's the eagle. And almost every other major Greek deity, so all the Olympians, have some sort of animal, many times a bird, that is their sacred animal. You know, like Hera has the peacock, and Hermes has the falcon, and Apollo has a swan, and so forth and so on. There's a lot of those, but they aren't, you know, kind of equated with each other. Whereas the Egyptian pantheon, there's a closer connection between the animal and the deity.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Well, it seems to be that it is the end of the hour. It's about that time. For those of you who are listening live, thank you for being so lovely in the chat room tonight. It was wonderful looking at all of your wonderful, insightful comments. Keep it up. It was wonderful having you, Catherine, as my guest host tonight.
I was very honored.
Stepping up in the middle of a snowstorm and doing this. You did great. I think everybody can give Catherine a round of applause. If I had an audio round of applause, I would do that for you, but I don't. So unfortunately, it's silent. But
okay.
For those of you who are interested in kind of giving your feedback on the Fox News debacle, go to the links that I posted in the chat room. And if you missed them, give me a few minutes and I'll update the Path Less Traveled page on Facebook and you can find them all there. So thank you, everybody, for listening tonight. I'll look forward to seeing you next week. And thank you for listening to the Path Less Traveled. Good night, everybody.
Nice blessings, everybody.